Last week we had the story in chapter 9 of Mark's Gospel, or chapter 8, where Jesus asked his disciples, "Who do you say that I am?" And you remember that when Jesus accepts the fact that Peter says, "You are the Messiah," he goes on to say that the Messiah that he is going to be or become is one who is going to suffer and die. And you remember Peter remonstrates against him, objects to that whole thing, and he says, "Get behind me, Satan." Well, today is kind of an extension of that little scene, because here he's talking to his disciples again, and he talks about the fact that he's going to have to suffer and die. And then some of the things you already know from the opening, the call to worship, that he talks about who's the greatest in welcoming a child, but all that in due time. This from chapter 9, Mark's Gospel. They went on from there and passed through Galilee. He did not want anyone to know it, for he was teaching his disciples, saying to them, "The Son of Man is to be betrayed into human hands, and they will kill him. And 3 days after they have killed him, he will rise again." But they did not understand what he was saying and were afraid to ask him. Then they came to Capernaum, and when he was in the house, he asked them, "What were you arguing about on the way?" But they were silent, because on the way they had been arguing with one another about who was the greatest. He sat down and called the 12 and said to them, "Whoever wants to be first must be the servant of all and last of all." Then he took a little child and put it among them, and taking it in his arms, he said to them, "Whoever welcomes a child such as this in my name welcomes me, and whoever welcomes me welcomes not me, but the one who sent me." The Gospel of the Lord. We have all heard, and I probably have delivered 100 sermons on these two little aspects here about the gospel, about whoever wants to be the greatest must be the last and the servant of all, and the other about welcoming a child, whoever welcomes a person not only welcomes the person but welcomes me, the Father. There's a line in the gospel, however, that I think gave me pause, and so I ask you to give pause as well. The gospel says that while they were walking down the road, they were talking about what was going to happen when Jesus died. And when Jesus questioned them about it, they were afraid to ask and answer him. They couldn't ask him the question about his death, about the suffering he was going to endure, and so they remained silent. What occurred to me was, you know, there are so many times in my life when I was afraid to ask the question. Lots of times in seminary, I'd got in trouble because I asked the question. But that's what we were there for. But have you ever in your life regretted that you never asked the question at the time? When you think about it, you know, the gospel says they were afraid to ask him the question. And isn't that what really is going on when we are afraid or when we cannot ask a question? Sometimes I think you don't ask the question, or I don't ask the question, because it's going to reveal my incompetence, like I should know that. Sometimes it may be questioning whether I'm keeping up with things or not. And do you read? Don't you understand what's happening around you? Sometimes the answer I may give may be an embarrassment because I feel not competent to really answer. Not only a lack of knowledge, but a lack of confidence in being able to say what I really think. There's a lot of fear of being judged when we open our mouths and ask a question, especially if we're asking a question of someone whom we consider to be more important, more status, more powerful, more whatever. That pushes me into a place of fear. Interesting thing about asking a question, when you ask a question, you're going to get a response. Sometimes I don't want to know the response. Now, in a court of law, they say, don't ever ask a question that you don't already know the answer to. But that doesn't work for the rest of life. Sometimes you have a very valid question, but sometimes, too, you might be afraid of what you're going to hear, and so you remain silent. And when you ask a question, what happens is you're inviting a dialogue, a repartee back and forth, because your question certainly does not have a single word answer for the most time, unless you're talking to your mother. Then you get straight one-liners, yes, no, maybe, go to your room. But in real life, when you ask a question of someone, you end up in a dialogue, which means you have to say even more and reveal even more of yourself. And if any of those prior fears are operating, you're even more terrified at what you're going to say the second time around. And so instead of having a dialogue, a lot of us choose to stay in my monologue and not say anything. Just keep it to myself. The interesting thing about the gospel this morning is that the disciples are facing the same problem in their own lives. Because Jesus says he's going to be leaving, he's going to die, and even though last week Peter said that's not going to happen, Jesus repeats the whole thing with a few more details, that I'm going to be betrayed. And so we could skip the part of the journey, and they come to the conclusion part where Jesus says, well, what were you arguing about? Well, what they might have been arguing about are very logical things. Like if he's going to die, first, who's going to take his place? Which one of us is going to be called to be the leader? Second question, whoever gets called to be the leader, will they have the same powers, same abilities, and the same wisdom that Jesus had? Now remember, we're talking about fishermen. Next question, who's the most important person among us as we try to make this decision? Who's the one that's going to be capable of doing that if it falls on us? The next question they might ask and be talking about is, who would dare betray him? Obviously, that's kind of an inside story or detail with Jesus and his disciples. He didn't say that to everybody, he said it to them. So certainly he must be talking about one of them. Who would dare among us betray him? The relationships in that little group of people is going to change dramatically when Jesus is not there. You know, when the head leaves and departs, all the little people come out and everybody starts arguing among themselves. Been to a lot of churches where that happens all the time, where there's a vacuum, it gets filled very quickly by the ones who want to be in charge. And sometimes that's very helpful, and sometimes it's not so helpful. But what is going to happen? Who is going to be able to straighten out these relationships? And how willing are all of us in this group willing to accept the change that is coming? Whatever that change may be. And the last one, if you are the greatest, what does that say about me? In a situation like this, where there's going to be a vacuum, what happens is not only are we measuring each other, but we are also looking at how I am being reflected upon by the group around me. So the ego is very much alive and well in this group. Naturally, humanly, disciples are not. And so Jesus dares to ask, maybe he overheard some of it, but he dares to ask them, well, what exactly were you discussing while we were walking on the road? And they said, well, we were talking about who's the greatest with all those other agendas in line. And his response is a very interesting response. Because, you know, when Jesus talks about the last being the first and the first being the last, and the weak being the strong and the strong have being the weak, there's an upside-down relationship in Jesus' mind about the world of his time, the world in our own time. It is nonsense in 21st century America to be talking about being the least means being the greatest. That is so countercultural, that is so not American, it's not patriotic, it's not really a good thing for democracy. Maybe that's why Christianity isn't doing so well these days. But Jesus says nonetheless, the greatest among you is the one who's going to be the last and who is going to serve all the rest. Serve all the rest. Not work for all the rest. Not get a pension for all doing all the rest. Not getting compensations of any kind. Serving. Serving. I'm going to say more about this next week too. Serving. It comes from somewhere within us to serve. You know what happens when I have a great theoretical idea and understanding of the gospel, and I live my whole life according to Christian teachings and the practices of our church, the denomination, and even in my private life, however I pray, however I respond to God, however I begin to perceive the world, perhaps with God's eye instead of my own. But the truth is, isn't it, that many times when push comes to shove, I fall back on what is most comfortable and most familiar. I don't put much energy in working toward being the last. I don't give a whole lot of stock in being called to be a servant of everybody. And yet that's what Jesus puts before them. And he says that to his disciples. He says it to us. And I leave that to you to work with that on your own. But the next thing he does, and interestingly, I thought when I first read this years ago, but it's still every time I read it, it comes up. I'm wondering if this last part where he takes a child and puts him in the midst. Now, he's all by himself with his disciples, remember. And now suddenly there's a child there, which led me to think that perhaps this was something that happened at another time. Maybe perhaps when he was blessing the children, maybe perhaps when he was in a family setting. But to be alone with the disciples and suddenly a child appears does seem a little bit incongruous. But be that as it may, the way it's placed in the gospel, I think, offers us something more. Because what Jesus turns our attention to in that simple little thing about welcoming a child, whoever welcomes the child welcomes me and welcomes the one who sent me. He has thrown the whole discussion into the mystery of our relationship with God. He will say later on in the gospel, remember, whatever you do to each other, you do to me. Is he just calling us to somehow be aware of the effect we have on each other, about the power of our presence, our words, our actions, our choices? Or is there something more? When Jesus says in the sheep and the goats, when you did it to me, and now you are doing it to the Father, the connection between the God who is searching for us and the God we worship and know. So in answer to who is the greatest, look at it this way. Every moment that we have where we can somehow reach into our compassion box and touch the life of another person, we're not necessarily winning grace. We're not necessarily scoring points. But begin to understand that what we are doing is welcoming the God who is searching for us finally to have a place here with us. We say we are everywhere and God is everywhere. Wherever we are, God is there. Extend that thought out. whenever we do anything for each other, is a moment of encounter with God. And remember, the holy is wherever humanity and divinity collide. That's holy space. But it also brings the holy as a gift to share with whomever we happen to be dealing. Sometimes I think we sell ourselves short in the things we do because we lose that dimension. We do things because we respond, and we respond in compassion, and we respond with care and charity, and we respond with bringing dignity to each other in terrible situations. But do we also understand that in that moment, in that very simple act and moment, we are touching the place, the face, the hands, the feet, the whole entire body, if you will, of God? That's why Jesus asked us not to see things only from the human, but begin to see them from the divine. In so doing, what we do every day really is, can be, and we might begin to understand it as, an encounter with God. Don't be afraid to ask questions. We might discover something or somebody that we've been waiting a long time to meet. Amen.